Comer para ganar. Expertas en nutrición deportiva. El podcast que te enseñará a comer y te dará las herramientas para ganar. No importa qué tanto sabes sobre el tema, estaremos aquí para proporcionarte la información más confiable. ¿Tengo que comer mientras hago ejercicio? ¿Cómo puedo correr más rápido? Con Aurora León y Mercedes Muñiz, expertas en nutrición, deporte y salud. ¡Comenzamos!
Bienvenidas y bienvenidas a todos a otro miércoles de Comer para Ganar. Hoy estamos con una invitada especial porque con este tema de las Olimpiadas nos viene a platicar mucho acerca de uno de los países más competitivos del momento. Tenemos aquí a Caroline Driesman, que nos va a platicar todo acerca de la nutrición en el equipo olímpico de natación de Estados Unidos. Hello everyone, welcome to another episode of Comer para Ganar. We are very excited here because we have Caroline Driesman. She's a graduate from Princeton University, and amongst many things that she's done along her life, she's an athlete herself and soon to be a registered dietitian. She works with the swimming team of the United States, and she's here to talk to us about what their strategies are to eat and drink during their events.
Hi, Mercedes. Hi, everyone. Welcome again to another Wednesday of Comer para Ganar. As Mercedes said in the introduction, we have a very special guest today, and basically because now we are in the Olympic times, we have been watching the Olympics, and I've been watching the swimming, basically because it's always amazing to watch these incredible athletes. So today, Caroline is gonna tell us a little bit about the U.S. swim team. She has been working with a lot of swimmers while they were having a camp in Hawaii, and a lot of things that she has been doing with them. So we are very pleased to welcome you. Hi, Caroline. Welcome to Comer para Ganar. And I know you're gonna say a lot of very interesting things. So welcome, welcome.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm very excited to talk to you guys.
Caro, I want to start with a basic question, but I think it's important for all your history. You told us that you were an athlete before. Could you tell us a little bit more about your experience as an athlete and how has that guided you through to become a registered dietitian and help you treat athletes yourself?
Sure, yes. So growing up, in middle school, high school, elementary school, I always was very active playing various sports, whether it was field hockey or soccer. I played basketball and lacrosse. And then in college, I played lacrosse at Princeton, as was mentioned. And, you know, that's a very different experience than playing a sport in high school in the U.S. It's, you know, all consuming, and it really taught me, you know, a lot about teamwork, time management, and really helped me mature while I was in college. I know that we did have a dietitian come speak with us once, and it was, I don't remember much of it, which maybe is a sign as to what the dietitian was saying to us. But it really wasn't a focus. It really was not a focus of our team. You know, our coaches wanted to make sure that we ate enough. And after weightlifting, we had chocolate milk. But otherwise, I didn't know much. I was lucky that growing up, my mom cooked for us and made healthy meals. And then when I was sort of thrown into college life, I didn't know really what to do and was very thrilled by things like having a frozen yogurt machine in all the dining halls and different cereals. And I think something that I wish I knew in college about dietetics is the importance of a balanced diet, eating whole foods, and that there's still a place for some of your favorite foods that maybe people would think are a little less healthy. And balance is really key. I think a unique perspective that I bring, and I know it's not uncommon that sport dietitians also were athletes themselves, but I think it helps connect with the athletes and understand from a mental standpoint, like what they're going through, struggles maybe involving body image, maturing when your bodies are maturing, especially through middle school, high school, into college, and how, you know, diet can affect all parts of health as well as sport.
Yeah, very interesting. And Caroline, after all this, I'm really interested in how did you finally end working with the U.S. swim team, and what is your role in the swim team?
So I interned with a senior dietitian at the U.S. Olympic Committee. Her name is Alicia Glass, and she works with the swim team, the track athletes as well, and has been there for a number of years. So I interned with her this past year remotely because of COVID, and that experience opened up an opportunity to come and help her at the U.S. swimming, their team training camp in Hawaii right prior to them leaving for Tokyo. So, you know, it was a 2.5 week experience.
Okay. So tell us, what was the experience about? What is your actual role in the swimming Olympic team? I know that you're in charge of that the athletes are actually eating at their times, that they're snacking correctly, etc. But how does it feel, and what is your real job just standing there in front of the athletes? What do you tell them? How can you help them?
Yeah, so, you know, at this point, all these athletes, like, they made it to the Olympic team, and they are going to be competing soon. So the main goal is just making sure that you're providing adequate nutrition and enough food for them. You know, you're not trying to change any diets or make any drastic changes. So a lot of it, a lot of what I did involved being at one of the pools. They would practice at one of three pools every day. And so we would set up the waters and the snacks at the pool, you know, make some smoothies for them to have after practice, and just make sure that when they finish swimming, they remember to grab something, maybe filling up water bottles during practice. And in the between practice times and between meals, we had a room, a nutrition room in the hotel, where we just had a bunch of snacks available. So making sure we had enough, packaging snacks into baggies, because of COVID, we had to make sure no one was just putting their hands in a bag of some sort of snack. So we would bag all of that, make sure we had enough. A lot of grocery store trips was involved in the 2 week period. Another thing we did was organizing with the hotel or wherever we were eating the menus, just to make sure that there was food that was balanced, and you know, if there are any dietary restrictions on the team, that those were you know, listen to, and every swimmer could eat something and eat adequately.
Oh, that's very interesting. You were talking about a special dietary recommendation. Is there a lot of athletes? I mean, I know it's very common, but what about in the swim team? Are there a lot of athletes with maybe intolerances? Are there many vegetarians? Are there many
gluten-free?
Yeah, gluten-free or lactose intolerant. How can you say about like the main community?
Mm-hmm. So I would say for the most part, there were few dietary restrictions. You know, there were, you know, some who were lactose intolerant, some who were vegetarian or vegan, but a little bit liberal in their vegetarianism and just wanted to make sure that they really got enough food. Otherwise, you know, not too much. A couple of food allergies, but...
easy to, yeah.
Yeah, on the most part, it was there wasn't anything, you know, too specific. A couple of people who wanted to avoid gluten, but it was nothing that that you know, potentially if an athlete felt like they needed to, you know, have meat as a vegetarian, or wanted to have milk as a vegan just because, you know, maybe they wanted to have a certain drink after practice. It seemed to me like, you know, they would still do that.
Yeah, they have the option. No, I have been able to being in Colorado Springs at the U.S. Olympic Committee, and I was amazed about the food service. I mean, I know you have been there. I remember all these different food that they can have. They always have like labeled, no? You can see the calorie of each meal, the sodium content, the fat content. Do you do that, like for example, in a space like you were in Hawaii, like you were able to label all that, or you just give the food to them and they know what they have to eat?
So actually, I haven't been to the training center in Colorado Springs. I hope to, but I haven't, unfortunately. And in terms of labeling everything, you know, here, no, we didn't. I think a lot of the swimmers, especially, you know, older swimmers who have been professional for a long time and competing for a long time, are pretty privy to, you know, the nutrients in various like recovery drinks or snacks that they eat. And it's helpful that really we're just providing a good selection of foods that are, you know, balanced and can provide good recovery and calories for after a practice.
Caro, I have a weird question, but I think many of our listeners are wondering the same thing. What is an approximate energy expenditure that a swimming athlete has? How much energy are you providing to your athletes daily? I know it's different for every athlete and it will depend on their training session, but I don't know, maybe an approximate that you have?
So, you know, I can't give you an approximation. I have, you know, we really didn't focus on numbers, but just knowing that swimmers are, you know, this isn't the everyday schedule, but some days, you know, a morning practice for 2 to 3-ish or 4 hours, sometimes followed by a lifting session and then an afternoon session of the same amount. So, you know, three-ish hours. So making sure that there's adequate food to accommodate that sort of physical exertion is the main task. And so, you know, when we ate at most of our meals, we ate at the hotel because of COVID. We wanted to just stay, you know, stay in a group as much as possible. And it was all, you know, buffet style, providing, you know, carbohydrates, proteins, fats, you know, all the vegetables, just all the, you know, a balanced diet of, you know, vegetables, whole grains, protein, making sure that there was always enough available. And then, you know, always having snacks for after practice or before lift. And then in the nutrition room, it was open. We left it open all day. So if anybody needed a little extra something, they could come in to grab a snack or make a peanut butter and jelly. And really, the main goal was just making sure that there was always enough food available and not so much, you know, calorie counting.
Okay. And what about during practice? Because you mentioned 3 to 4 hour swim practice. Do they get to eat or drink anything during that practice? Do you provide it? Do they have to take them themselves? How does that work?
Yeah, so definitely drinking. And Hawaii is hot. They were swimming outside and in preparation for going to Tokyo, where it's really hot. A big focus of ours was just making sure everybody was drinking enough fluids. And so we had, you know, water available, different kind of Powerades also available during practice. You know, they could always come in and grab like a bar or something if they got hungry during practice. For the most part, mostly drank while swimming.
Okay.
Not so much eating.
I have another very specific question, and I don't know if you do that like during this camp. We know that with this kind of training, the athletes can benefit from having a periodized nutrition, like maybe in between the practice, for example, one day before having a very, very long training, the diet could change one day before. Or if they are focusing or just gaining muscle, maybe you can do some changes on the diet as well to focus muscle growth. Do you do this kind of different diet strategies during the camp or no? I mean, they are in charge of, I assume they are in charge of their own diets and they could choose what they want to eat depending on the diets that every athlete has. But is there any changes on the menu because of the training or it's always the same?
Yeah, that's a good question. So during the camp is still like very ramped up training. They're not like tapering or reducing their training until they got to Tokyo. And so, you know, while they were in Hawaii, they were all still training very hard. And so there wasn't, you know, the focus was just on making sure that everyone had enough to eat. But then, you know, we provide guidelines for nutrition during the tapering window. Otherwise, in the camp, it was, you know, they were eating as if they were training hard, which they were.
And finally, one last question. What can you tell us about a body composition of an athlete? I mean, we understand that each sport has their own body fat percentage that is ideal. What about for swimmers? What are you, you as dietitians try to work on with your athletes? What amount of fat, what amount of muscle, etc.?
So, because I, you know, really was only working with these athletes for 2 weeks, there was no body composition testing, but we do, you know, we did have a scale and encourage the athletes to just know their numbers. So know what's their usual weight and then, you know, weigh themselves in the mornings, you know, on a daily basis in Hawaii when they're away to make sure, you know, there's no big weight losses. And that also, you know, helps with hydration, you know, making sure you're maintaining a hydration status and trying to keep the numbers consistent. I think, you know, changing body composition is something that can take longer and is usually done in the, you know, post or in between competition time. So right now is really just maintaining your muscle mass and maintaining fitness. I don't know if that answered your question.
Yeah, perfect. Caroline, we're almost getting to an end. But I have a curiosity. What is like the favorite food for these kind of athletes? What would you say that they love to eat or they eat more than another thing?
So, you know, I think if we did, you know, there were only so many options available when we were in Hawaii. So it's hard to say a favorite food if there were unlimited options, but you know, in terms of snack type foods or drinks, I would say, you know, favorites are peanut butter and jelly and chocolate milk.
Okay.
Yeah, I think that's for most athletes.
That's an easy, an easy way to help them. And why? I mean, I have just before saying bye. Why Hawaii? Why did the U.S. Olympic Committee choose Hawaii to go for a camp? They usually choose altitude camps. And why did they went to Hawaii?
I don't know if for swimming, I don't know where is actually usually chosen for swimming. I think there's altitude camps for, you know, long distance running and things. I'm not sure about swimming. But, you know, I think they chose Hawaii. It wasn't the initial location, but because of COVID and, you know, the number of pools available, a lot of the location choosing depends on, you know, convenience to pools and having adequate, you know, adequate number of lanes and space to train. I think, you know, it's a place where the weather is very nice. It's also kind of halfway, you know, mm-hmm. if people are coming from the East Coast of the U.S., it's kind of halfway on the trip to getting to Tokyo. So I think it's a good, stepping stone in between Tokyo. But I don't know the full strategy other than it was, you know, it's nice weather, and then, you know, had a good space for training.
Okay. I have another question. What athletes do you think we have to be focusing on? Name a couple of them. I mean, I've been watching the swimming. I can say some of them, but which athletes should we be watching?
I mean, I think that it's hard to just say, you know, any specific athlete is, you know, really, really any of them have, you know, anyone who makes it to the finals has as equal of a chance as anyone else of, you know, medaling. And I don't know if you saw last night, but 17-year-old Lydia Jacoby, she, you know, won gold and... she wasn't expected to win gold. It was her first Olympics. And so that's just a good example of you never know who's going to come out, you know, on top. And so I think paying attention to anyone in the field is important.
Yeah, and experienced athletes like Katie Ledecky, no? How many Olympics has she been on?
She started, I think she was 15 when she was in her first Olympics, and she's 24.
She might have three or four. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Carol,
yeah,
it was
everybody.
Yeah.
Carol, I think we're getting to an end, but it was really nice meeting you, and thank you so much for having this talk with us. I think our listeners are going to be very excited, especially because we're right in the middle of the Olympics, so they are going to be excited to understand a little bit more about the swim team.
And Carol, can you share your social media so the people can get in touch with you if there's anyone that has a question?
Yes, thank you. Thank you so much for having me. I had so much fun talking to you. So my Instagram handle is Born to Crunch, like the granola name. It's BORNTOCRUNCH.
Perfect. We'll let everyone, well, we'll write it in our description so they can link it directly. Gracias a todos por escuchar otro capítulo más de Comer para Ganar. Esperemos que les haya gustado y ya saben que si tienen cualquier duda pueden escribir a nuestras redes sociales.
Y les recordamos a nuestros aliados, la Federación Mexicana de Nutrición Deportiva y Haz Deporte.
Bye.
Esto fue Comer para Ganar. Un episodio más hablando de lo que sí es verdad en temas de nutrición, deporte y salud, con Aurora León y Mercedes Muñiz. Síguenos en @comerparaganar.
The time is now.